Saraswati Thakur Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai, ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Dhammacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai, Prem Sekho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadadhara Sri Vyasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gaur Bhakta Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana ki jai, Vrindavan Dhamma ki jai, Navadvip Dhamma ki jai, Navadvip Dhamma ki jai, Sri Jagannath Puri Dhamma ki jai, Shri Gaur Nitya ki jai, Shri Krishna Balarama ki jai, Shri Giriraj Maharaj ki jai, Shri Govardhana Dhamma ki jai, Shri Radha Giridhari ki jai, Shri Radha Giridhari ki jai, Shri Radha Govardhana Dhari ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Rayanam namaskritcham maram chayaram narotamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayamadira nasta prayeshiva. Abadeshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shokir Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 11th chapter. What verse?
Six.
Six doesn't seem so. I'll read 6 and 7. Because 6 doesn't seem to have a purport. Yo yaritatmano dushena daksha dakshananam tu dharmataha lokanam svastaye yaste tapo parikashrame Yovati Ratyatamon Meshnena Yovati Ratmanom Shena Dakshayanyam Tudharmataha Dakshayanyam Tudharmataha Lokanam Svataye Dhashte Lokanam svastaye dhaste
Lokanam svastaye dhaste
Tapobadarikashrame Tapobadarikashrame Yovitaryatmanom shena Dakshayanyam tudharmataha Lokanam svastaye dhaste
Lokanam svastaye dhaste
Tapobadarikashrame Yobatayatmanam shena Takshayanam tadamaha Lokanam svastaye dhyaste Tapobadarikashrame
Yovatiryatmanam shena
Yovatiryatmanam shena
Takshayanyam tudharmadaha
Takshayanyam tudharmadaha
Lokanam svastaye dhyaste
Lokanam svastaye dhyaste
Tapobadarikashrame
Tapobadarikashrame
Shena.
I'm Shena.
Yovatiryatmanam Shena.
Dakshayanam Tudharmataha.
Dakshayanam Tudharmataha.
Lokanam svastaye dhyaste.
Lokanam svastaye dhyaste.
Tapobadarikashrame.
Tapobadarikashrame.
Please.
Yovatiryatmanam Shena. Lokanam svastaye dhyaste Tapobadarikashrame Yovatiryatmanam shena Dakshayanyam tudharmataha Lokanam svastaye dhyaste Yaha, he who, Lord Narayan,
he who, Lord Narayan,
Avatirya,
Avatirya,
adventing, Atmanah.
Atmanah.
Of himself. Amshena.
Amshena.
With a part nara.
With a part nara.
Dakshayanyam.
Dakshayanyam.
In the womb of Dakshayani.
In the womb of Dakshayani.
The daughter of Maharaj Daksha.
The daughter of Maharaj Daksha.
To. Indeed.
Indeed.
Dharmataha.
Dharmataha.
From Dharma Maharaj. Lokanam.
Lokanam.
Of all people. Svastaye.
Svastaye.
For the benefit of.
For the benefit of.
Adhyasteye.
Adhyasteye.
Adhyaste.
Adhyaste.
Executes.
Executes.
Kapaha.
Kapaha.
Austerity.
Austerity.
Bhadarikashrame.
Bhadarikashrame.
In the place known as Bhadarikashrama. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Narayan, along with his partial manifestation Nara, appeared in this world through the daughter of Daksha Maharaj, known as Murti. He was begotten by Dharma Maharaj for the benefit of all living entities. Even now, he is still engaged in executing great austerities near the place known as Bhadarikakshama. Repeat. Lord Narayan, along with his partial manifestation Nara, appeared in this world through the daughter of Daksha Maharaj, known as Murti. He was begotten by Dharma Maharaj for the benefit of all living entities. Even now, he is still engaged in executing great austerities near the place known as Bhadarikashrama. Text number 7. Dharma mulam hi bhagavan sarva veda mohari smartyam chayat tat vidam rajan yena chatma prasidati. Dharma mula hi bhagavan. We'll just repeat word for word. Dharma mulam, the root of religious principles.
Indeed.
Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Sarva
Veda Mayaha,
the
essence of all Vedic knowledge. Harihi, the Supreme Being. Smitam, Smitam Cha, and the scriptures. Tadvidam, of those who know the Supreme Lord. Rajan, O King. Yena, by which religious principles. Cha, also. Atma, the soul, mind, body, and everything. Prasidati, become fully satisfied. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Being, the Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, the root of all religious principles, and the memory of great authorities. O King Yudhisthira, this principle of religion is to be understood as evidence. On the basis of this religious principle, everything is satisfied, including one's mind, soul, and even one's body. Repeat. The Supreme Being, the Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, the root of all religious principles, and the memory of great authorities. O King Yudhisthira, this principle of religion is to be understood as evidence. On the basis of this religious principle, everything is satisfied, including one's mind, soul, and even one's body. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated by Yamaraj, Dharmantu Sakshat Bhagavat Panitam. Yamaraj, the representative of the Lord, who takes care of the living beings after their death, gives his verdict as to how and when the living being will change his body. He is the authority, and he says that the religious principles consist of codes and laws given by God. No one can manufacture religion, and therefore manufactured religious systems are rejected as the followers of the Vedic principles. In Bhagavad Gita 15:15, it is said, Vedaish sarvair aham eva vedyaha. Vedic knowledge means to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Therefore, One speaks of the Vedas, scriptures, religion, or the principles of everyone's occupational duty. All of them must aim at understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6 therefore concludes, Savai Pumsum Parodharmo Yaktir Bhaktir Hoksaje Ahoitaki Aparti Hata Yayatma Supersedati. In other words, religious principles aim at learning how to render transcendental service to the Lord. That service must be unmotivated and unchecked by material conditions. The human society will be happy in all respects. Then human society will be happy in all respects. The Smriti, the scriptures, following the principles of Vedic knowledge, are considered the evidence of Vedic principles. There are 20 different types of scripture for following religious principles. Among them, the scriptures of Manu and Yajnavalkya are considered to be all-pervading authorities. The Yajnavalkya Smriti says, Shruti Smriti Sadachara Svasyacha Priyam Atmanaha Samyag Sankalpaya Jya Kamo Dharma Mulam Idam Smritam. One should learn human behavior from Shruti, the Vedas, from Smriti, the scriptures following the Vedic principles. And Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidin Vina Ahoy Kantiki Hare Bhaktir Utpatayaiva Kalpate. The purport is that to become a devotee, one must follow the principles laid down in Shruti and Smriti. One must follow the codes of Puranas and the Pancharatrika Vidhi. One cannot be a pure devotee without following the Shruti and Smriti. And the Shruti and Smriti without devotional service cannot lead one to the perfection of life. Therefore, from all the evidence, the conclusion is that without bhakti, devotional service, there is no question of religious principles. God is the central figure in the performance of religious principles. Almost everything going on in this world as religion is devoid of any idea of devotional service, and therefore condemned by the verdict of Srimad Bhagavatam. Without devotional service, so-called principles are only cheating. The verse again. Dharma mulam hi bhagavan sarva veda moharihi smritam chayad vidam yajan yad vachatma prasidati. The Supreme Being, the Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, the root of all religious principles, and the memory of great authorities. O King Yudhisthira, this principle of religion is to be understood as evidence. On the basis of this religious principle, everything is satisfied, including one's mind, soul, and even one's body. Prabhupada, in the purport, talks about Yamaraj giving the laws of the universe and determining what, and he's the person who takes care of the living entities after their death. Yamaraj is an empowered living being, and he's one of the Mahajans. It's mentioned that he is one of the Mahajans. Bali Vyavasakhi Vayam. Vayam means Yamaraj. He's speaking, I think it's in the sixth canto where he says that he is one of the Mahajans. And he's a very advanced being. Sometimes people that are judges in courts seem to be very advanced, and even though they have to decide between two different advocacies that seem to be both correct, and they're both citing precedents and various laws, the judge has to decide who is correct. And very often it's a sort of a compromise thing, but often he sides with one of the advocates and says that this is the actual truth. So Yamaraj is an empowered living being who knows what's going on all over the universe in the mind of every living entity. And sometimes he has to make very difficult decisions about the destination of a person. And Krishna actually knows everything. And it's mentioned that he knows that he is the memory of great authority. So he knows everything. He knows how many hairs are on our heads and how many blades of grass there are in the whole universe. Not only on this planet. But Yamaraj knows many things, and he's a very empowered living being to know what the mind is of every living being and what is going to be the destination of a person after this, the demise of their material body. Very intelligent person, Yamaraj. sometimes called the Lord of Death, Yamaraj. Yama means death, Yama, and the King of Death. So Yamaraj is a very important person. And this phrase, Dharmantu Saksat Bhagavat Pranitam, that is quoted here in this purport, shows that there are laws, not only rules, but laws of the universe. Sometimes we think of nature as being the laws, natural laws, the laws that govern the solar system, so-called. And if we buy into solar system, or that we live in a solar-centric universe instead of a geocentric universe, which is what most of us are taught in school, we're operating under these under laws. They may seem to be natural laws, but what is natural is not exactly something that happens by random or by chance, but something that happens by just by law. Just like if we drive an automobile on the road, we obey certain signs, we stay in certain lanes to avoid collisions. We think that there's a mind behind everything that happens, or not just one mind, sometimes a group of minds. This mind or group of minds are thinking about the order that has to be followed in driving an automobile, the order that has to be followed in everything, and the laws. We don't even see them. Sometimes they impinge upon our being, but we don't see them. They're kind of invisible, but they exist. There's a saying in English, the long arm of the law is going to get you. So we don't see these laws necessarily, or we don't see the people who make the laws, but we believe that they are made. So similarly, the whole universe operates under Dharmantu Saksad, the laws of God. Even though we don't see God in everyday life, most of us don't see God, but we have a sense that there's kind of subtle laws operating, the laws of like in everyday life, we have the Newton's laws of action and reaction, so like everything that goes up has to come down, the laws of gravity, for example. So there's a lot of laws that seem to exist about the spinning of the planets around the sun, or the going-ons of the planets around the Earth, or whatever they are. And even the sun has its own orbit, according to Prabhupada. I don't know much about the structure of the universe, but it's a very complex structure. The structure, as we know, it may not be correct. And Prabhupada said sometimes in different places that they have gone to the moon, and they have not gone to the moon, or maybe they went to another planet named Rahu. And Sariputta, who has studied mathematics at Cornell University, has a PhD from Cornell University in mathematics, said that of all the things that Prabhupada said about going and not going to the moon, he thinks that some beings, human beings, went to the moon, but they didn't enter into it, they didn't live there, they just stayed there for a very short time. It's sort of like going into water. When we go into the depths of water, we have to wear a diving bell or scuba equipment. We don't stay there for a long time, maybe 15 minutes or half an hour or 1 hour or 2 hours at the most. So it's something like going to the moon. The moon is supposedly a very frigid place. It's said to have a very low temperature, hundreds of degrees below zero centigrade or Fahrenheit or both. And maybe, according to Sariputta's analysis, human beings did actually go to the moon at one time, but they couldn't stay there. They had to have very expensive equipment in order to be there at all. And of course now there's a conspiracy theory that it was all fabricated, that it was all done in a movie set. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's interesting that even in a country as so-called advanced as New Zealand, there's a company called Kleenex. They make these tissues that you blow your nose on, and they advertise their product by saying that it's useful for dusting off old movie sets. And they had a photograph of what looked like a man on the moon. So it's a theory. It's a conspiracy theory, but it's a theory that hasn't completely died out. We haven't gone there. Even Prabhupada said sometimes that we hadn't gone there, and it was even published in newspapers that he hadn't gone there. And one devotee told me that because he says the distance to the moon is greater than the distance to the sun, but they couldn't have reached the moon in the time that they were designated to go there. So there's a lot of laws that are correct and maybe some laws that are incorrect. And there's also the concept of the moon phases and eclipses, and some say that the Earth gets in front of the Sun, and that causes an eclipse. And sometimes they say that the Earth gets in front of the Moon, and that causes an eclipse. And what Prabhupada said, that there's a part of the Bhagavatam that says that the Moon is actually being attacked by an entity named Rahu. And this causes different phases of the moon and different eclipses. So these are some of the laws of God. And these are very intricate. And as it is said in the verse, Krishna is the memory of great authorities. He knows everything. And what is everything? Well, we have an example in the dictionaries. Like there's a very big unabridged dictionary. And we have heard in Vedic literature that pocket dictionaries and small dictionaries are as good as the big unabridged dictionaries, but they're smaller. They're not as complete. They're not as thorough. So in a sense, and this verse is quoted here, Savaitum soparo dharma yakir bhaktir hoksajaya hoitiki apatiyata yayatman supersedity. In a sense, this is the verse that says that all religions are equal. The translation is that the supreme occupation or dharma for all humanity is that by which men contain to loving this devotional service unto the Supreme Lord. This devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. So what is devotional service and what is religion? Mostly religion, whether it's Christian, Hindu, Muslim, or Buddhist, or whatever it may be, is not complete. I'm not trying to put down religions, but unless there's a development for love of God, it's a very superficial thing. Someone can be born as a Jew or a Christian or a Hindu or a Muslim or a Buddhist and not necessarily develop love for God. Love for God can be found in every religious persuasion, not only in the Hindu tradition, but in the Buddhist tradition, in the Islamic tradition, in all traditions. That's devotional service, and that's the essence of religion. So what we study in the Bhagavatam is not only what God says or words, descriptions about God, but devotional service, how to do service, how to actually, the science of God is what it is, and it's all about how to develop love for God. There are different ways to show our love for Krishna. One of the ways is to dress Krishna very beautifully. That's deity worship. Another way is to preach his glories to other people and distribute his message, like book distribution. And there was one case where a devotee was hoping that Prabhupada would sanction him by saying that what pleases you the most. And Prabhupada just said, just try to love Krishna. This person was a very big book distributor. So even in sometimes in serving the Lord, as a book distributor or a dresser of the deities, one can become enamored with the material energy, so much so that one can leave actually the service of the Lord, and it happens. Once someone, I was talking about how there's a lot of corruption. I was talking to a group of people, most of them were not the devotees, and I was talking about how corruption has infiltrated into religious practices all over the world. And one of the questions was, well, does corruption actually exist sometimes in ISKCON? Not sometimes, but does corruption exist in ISKCON? And I had to give the answer, which was yes, it does exist. We can be doing very important service for Krishna, and we can, because of corruption, because of the strength of Maya, we can become attracted to Maya and leave that Krishna consciousness. So it is said in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam that religions that don't develop, that don't teach their practitioners to develop love for God are actually incomplete. And the word kaitava is used, that it's a very strong word. It means cheating or false religion. So in the name of religion, sometimes people say, I'm a Jew, I'm a Catholic, I'm a Christian, I'm a Jew, I'm a Hindu, I'm a Buddhist, or whatever. And because there's not love for Krishna, it's an incomplete thing, because it doesn't have devotional service attached to it. It's not developing love for Krishna. It becomes something in name only. And people go to churches, mosques, synagogues, sometimes just out of social duty, but they don't develop love for God. And that's devotional service. Devotional service is when there's an actual development of love for Krishna when we're doing things to serve the Lord. And sometimes Krishna consciousness is called the kitchen religion. In the West, people are very attached to what they eat and tastes of food. So Prabhupada said that we, in some lectures, that we have to spend millions of tons of blood, to shed millions of tons of blood to make one devotee. And I think I mentioned this before, that it's not an easy thing to push out. It's not an easy thing to cater for big events. It's not an easy thing to manage many restaurants. And there are more restaurants and more catering facilities in this country probably than anywhere else per capita. But it's not an easy thing. And as Prabhupada said, that one, we have to shed millions of tons of blood in order to make one devotee. I mean, we might go to a festival, or we might have several restaurants, and out of those restaurants and festivals, maybe three or four or five or six devotees, our people will manifest devotional service or manifest full love for Krishna. So it's not an easy thing. It's not a new thing. It's actually quite an old thing. Krishna consciousness is thousands of years old. And in a sense, the Vedas are the instruction manual. If we follow the Vedic scriptures and the laws of God, Dharman tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, then things become a little bit, there are higher order laws. Things become a little bit easier. There are ordinary laws, laws of the land, laws of the state, that we tend to follow, because if we don't follow them, we could be put in jail, we could be killed, we could be executed. But there are higher laws. Laws of the universe. Laws, just like we have in physical motion, the laws of action and reaction, Newton's laws of dynamics, of thermodynamics, and the laws of karma, which are the higher laws, we have action and reaction. According to these laws, or the laws of karma, we might call them, when we do something that's evil, there's a way to be punished for it. And it's not just going to jail. Sometimes it's a very evil thing, but it doesn't last forever. I was at a conference once with, it was a kind of a Vaishnava Catholic conference, and one of the Christian theologians was saying that when we don't go to hell forever, which I thought was kind of interesting, because I always thought that in certain theologies that hell was an eternal damnation, it was something that lasted forever. But he said actually it doesn't last forever. And that when we read in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that there are different hells, hellish punishments for different types of actions, they don't last forever. They have a certain period of beginning and then they end. They come to an end, and then people come back to the material world, and they have a choice to be either evil or good. Depends on what they want to do with their lives. If devotional service is something that people are attracted to and develop, then they become good, and they develop all good qualities, the good qualities of people on higher planetary systems. According to the Bhagavatam, there are different levels of existence there. Systems that are higher than this Bhumandala earth plane. And on these higher systems, people have a different form of action. They are not so attracted to the material energy. Of course, they have to die. They don't live forever, but they may live a long, long time, longer than we can even imagine. Like Lord Brahma lives for millions of years. But still, his life has to come to an end. So devotional service means going beyond even higher planetary systems. It means going to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is beyond the heavenly planets. So I think we'll end there, and maybe there's some comments or questions someone wants to make. Yes?
Is corruption usually sex life? Is that what it's usually motivates? We know in the material world, the strongest, attraction is sex life. It's kind of like regarded, apart from killing people, it's kind of that's a bit more enjoyable. But is that usually what? So I mean, why would people be corrupt? What's the benefit of it?
Well, as you intimated, the desire for sex is probably one of the key, most fundamental desires. But also there's a minority of people who leave Krishna consciousness because they're addicted to substance abuse, like drugs and alcohol and other things. But yeah, I think the sexual drive is probably the most overpowering of all material desires. At least that's my opinion.
It's very pollutant, isn't it?
Any other comments or questions?
Yeah,
Yes?
I
hope that microphone's going to work.
It goes outside.
Oh, it goes outside, okay.
Yeah.
Does it go all over the world?
Within the radius of 5 kilometers. I grew up in a Christian church, and most of the other Pentecostal churches always say that if you do go to, if you're a Christian and you manage to go to hell, it's eternal damnation. But what's happening lately is because the Bible is so much open to interpretation, there are so many different, even within one denomination, there are so many different opinions, so it becomes really confusing in Christian theology.
Well, the difference, maybe, I mean, there's a lot of differences between Christian theology and Christian conscious theology and Buddhist theology and Jewish philosophy. But one of the things that's unique about Vedic philosophy is that it's handed down carefully from one master to another. And the handing down is based on purity. It's not just that it can be given to someone, anyone, but the person has to be a person who is free from the tendency to cheat, free from mistakes, free from illusion, free from those things, becoming bewildered. And those are all the predecessors of the line of the cyclic succession, who are pure in heart. They're free from making mistakes, they're free from illusion, they're free from the cheating propensity. So this is a very rare thing, and this is what keeps the purity must be maintained. That's the difference. It has to be handed down from master to master. The predecessors are based on, they're considered to be pure. And it's that judgment of their purity that keeps the Krishna consciousness movement pure. Of course, it can, and it's written in the Bhagavad Gita that somehow or the cyclic succession, it's called the cyclic succession, has been broken. It does happen, but it doesn't say why it happened. It just said somehow or other it happened. But that's one of the key differences. And the example has been used as a mango being picked from a ripe mango being picked from a tree is handed down from person to person. It's not allowed to fall and be squashed. So the original purity has to be maintained. That's the difference. That's one of the key differences. And there's a lot of, like you say, there's a lot of differences in a lot of denominations. As far as I know, the original Catholic, Roman Catholic Church is the original Christian denomination. And somehow or other, they've been able to accommodate many of the other divisions, like Lutheranism and Methodism and so on and so forth. Various charities. Yes?
I was suggesting that you translation, there is a mention of the Krishna is the memory of great authorities. But it's interesting because in that verse, the Prabhupada, of course, he says, Sarvasyaham, his eternity is so, he's like remembrance, forgetfulness. But in this translation, he says it's the memory of great authorities. Is that referring to, in the context of writing scriptures, like Brihad Bhagavatamrita? And there was the Chaitanya Charitamrita also. There was directly given by the Supreme Lord himself to that person.
Well, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I think it's in the Manjulila, 20th chapter or 24th chapter, where Lord Chaitanya is instructing Sanatana Goswami how to write the Hari Bhakti Vilas. He doesn't give him all the details. He says, I'll just give you a summary, a synopsis, and then you'll be empowered to do the rest. So this book, Hari Bhakti Vilas, is a very detailed book that describes, among other things, how to worship the deities and what the behavior of a Vaishnava is. It's a very detailed book. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we don't find all the details that are there. So in one sense, because Lord Chaitanya had because he was God himself, he had the memory of all these details, that he empowered a person like Sanatana Goswami, who's considered a pure devotee, and who has an identity in Krishna Lila, to write all the details. And Prabhupada in the purports to some of the verses in this chapter cites Hari Bhakti Vilas. Some of the details are given, the different types of avatars and the different types of behaviors. And this is what the memory is. Krishna actually has the memory, and it's reposing in him, but he doesn't give it. He doesn't say it directly, like when he gave instructions to Lord Brahma to create the universe. He didn't give detailed instructions how to do it. He just, with a few syllables like ta and pa, he, through the heart of Brahma, he instilled this knowledge. So he's the repository of all this knowledge, and it was given to others like Sanatana Goswami and Lord Brahma and others. So he is definitely the memory of these great authorities. We look to these great authorities like Sanatana Goswami and Brahma as well. They are great authorities, and we live by their instructions. The instructions of Hari Bhakti Vilas are very detailed. And they say, for instance, when we come into the temple to ring the bell and to say Jaya, Jai Radha Madhava, or Jai Govinda. And Krishna, I don't see any record of him or Lord Chaitanya saying those things. So in a way, these details are all imparted to the great authorities. Anything else? Looks like the getting cold breakfast is winning the war. Okay, I think we'll end there. Thank you, Hare Krishna.